This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Ready for an awesome episode? Well, so are we. But you know what? Before we get to it, I got to tell you that members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. Bam! Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as our friends at Navy Federal do. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. And then how many certificates do this? You can then add money at any time and watch your savings grow. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.
But hey, enough of my yakking. What do you say? Let's boogie.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and today was supposed to be the day before taxes were due, but our friends in Washington have given us another month to put that off, so today, let's party! Well, you know, we cooked up a pretty exciting show for you, so kick off your shoes and relax. Joe's mom made some punch over there, and but I'd go easy on the brownies, because, you know, sometimes she throws in a little surprise, but it totally helps you relax. Today, we'll cover how to make some eye-popping money with some hacks about your credit card and savings accounts, how to stack some Benjamins by driving for Uber, and how to help your family members with money. And all of these tips came from people like you. So just sit back and relax. Plus, we'll have our usual headlines. We're going to throw out the Haven Lifeline, as we always do. And I'm going to nail down this whole production with my amazing trivia. And now, two guys who are about to do a lot of talking. It's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
It is Wednesday, which means we're all about the talking and the listening and the laughing and the thinking and the money making.
Whoa, easy.
Bridge too far?
Thinking? Not happening.
I'm out.
Tap me out.
Welcome to No Thinking on this show podcast. I'm Joe Salci, High Average Joe Money on Twitter. And that voice who's...
the sultry voice of the gods.
Who's bringing it home, Mr. OG. I love a review that we just got that said that you love yourself very much. And I want to say, yes, he does. And he also hates you. So there you go.
It's a match made in heaven.
It is super. They didn't say that piece, just the first piece. They also said, I can't get through a sentence without laughing. And I will attempt to do so today.
Very stoic today.
Yes.
We'll be very serious.
Probably not.
And I will not love myself anymore.
We have a fantastic
I'll just
show.
Make love to myself.
Of three. Wow. That went the wrong way in a hurry. We've got some great stacker success stories today, OG. We've got three short interviews with people doing some fantastic stuff from our community. Alan, Claudia, and John. Plus, we have some of your letters. It is a potpourri episode, so it means we can shine the light on some of the cool stuff you guys are doing, answer some questions. But first, we got some headlines, so let's get the party started.
Hello, darlings. And now, it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our first headline, OG, is something we talk about often. I remember a great quote from you saying, you got to know the game you're playing.
It sounds like something I would have said.
It was probably brilliant, and you probably loved it very much. This piece comes to us from the Wall Street Journal. It's written by Spencer Jacob. All that glitters isn't Goldman.
Oh, that's a play on words.
Spencer's got it. Spencer Wright, if you were to cook up a name for a company guaranteed to get attention at the moment, then you couldn't do much better than Rocket Fuel Blockchain. How about that stock? RKFL.
Remember when that company changed their name to Cannabis? It was something about cannabis, even though they were, you know, they're like a dog treat manufacturer or something like that. I don't remember what it was, but they changed their ticker symbol to like weed or something like that. And the stock went up through the roof.
Completely pivoted. Or how about when,
or Zoom,
when Zoom went public and everybody thought that their ticker was ZOOM, which was some little Chinese company that was not really doing any business.
Yep.
Rocket Fuel Blockchain. What a great name. And if you want a prestigious bank, by the way, to associate with that company, how about Goldman Sachs? That'd be at the top of your list, wouldn't it be?
Sure.
Well, turns out following the release on April 1st of a news release titled Goldman Small Cap Research Publishes New Research Report on Rocket Fuel Blockchain Inc., the penny stock surged by as much as 335% in 4 days. You kidding me? Goldman wrote a research report on this little company? That's all it took. Several lines down, though, is a notice that the research firm, which, by the way, accepts payments for reports, you can pay them to do a report for you, Goldman Small Cap Research, quote, is not in any way affiliated with Goldman Sachs and Company. All they said was Goldman did a research report on this. Stock goes through the roof. Sounds like a pretty nice pump and dump scheme to me.
You just got to know where your researchers are headquartered. If it's Manhattan, New York or Manhattan, Kansas, nothing wrong with the Kansas State, the fighting Kansas Statins. I don't know what they are. They're purple Wildcats, I guess they are. Yeah. Nothing wrong with the Wildcats over in Kansas State, but it's a different Manhattan.
Totally
the Little Apple, they call it.
It's like Paris, Michigan.
Yeah. Paris, Texas.
Paris, Texas. Yeah. Paris, Texas does have an Eiffel Tower.
That does. Yeah.
That has a cowboy hat on the top.
Doesn't the one in Paris, France also
have a cowboy hat on the top?
Yeah.
Not yet. That's up to you, man. We keep telling you, you got to do your job. Get that done. By the way, Paris, Texas, home of?
Paris Hilton.
Incorrect. Dr. Pepper. Come on, dude.
Oh.
Pretend you've lived in Texas for a little while.
I feel like I should know that one then.
The Rocket Fuel Blockchain, by the way, was formerly known as B4MC Gold Mines, Inc. And before that, it was Heavenly Hot Dogs, Inc.
Wow, they really pivot, don't they?
It doesn't appear to have any revenue and maybe not even a product based on litigation about a patent that expired. The report was written, by the way, by an analyst who, while he appears not to have lit the world on fire at more established firms, has an auspicious name, Rob Goldman.
You know, it's his firm.
How great is that? Rob Goldman takes your money, writes a report. Then they say, Goldman wrote about us. Mm-hmm. You got to do your homework. Got to do a little more homework. I mean, all the people that threw money at that thing. It's like our Mando blockchain from Monday. It's just horrible. Our second headline comes to us from CNN and the continuing story of Wall Street bets after GameStop. Did you see what the people at Wall Street Bets are doing now?
No. Are they, can I get them to be long small cap value? Because that's where my money is. I just need a little pump. Just pump, baby.
Just start writing reports like every day. It's going through the roof. It's going through the roof. Come on, guys.
Moon.
Going through the roof.
Under the moon.
This is written by Claire Duffy. First GameStop, now Gorillas. Redditors are pouring money into saving apes. And I thought she had a misspelling, like saving apps.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I have heard about this.
Not at all. This is really cool. The Wall Street Bets community is moving beyond GameStop and AMC, but its latest investment target isn't a stock, Bitcoin, or even NFTs. It's Gorillas. That's not monkey business. Claire is so clever. See, I could make it through a sentence without laughing, dude. Yeah. That one right there that Claire wrote. Not that funny. Members of the Reddit group who gained national attention for their role in pumping, but I can't make it through the next sentence about how clever I am about
how clever you are about how clever she's not.
Nah, suck it, nerds. I'm so funny.
I can't do it. That's members of the Reddit group who gained national attention for their role in pumping up the January trading frenzy of GameStop, AMC, and other meme stocks rallied over the weekend to use their earnings to symbolically adopt gorillas through donations to the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund. This is just, I just think this is super. Why gorillas? Bit of an inside joke. Wall Street Bets members refer to themselves and others on the page as apes as part of the group's internal lingo. It all started last Saturday. Member Wall Street Bets adopted a baby gorilla named Yurangano from the organization on behalf of GameStop. Since then, Diane Fossey's received thousands of new adoptions and more than $333,000 in donations, compared with around 20 adoptions in a typical weekend, according to a spokesperson. Use unrealized GME gains to adopt a gorilla, one Wall Street Bets poster said on the site. I want to bring this up because I love this idea. You and I meet people, OG, who say, you know what? I got enough for me, so I'm done. Don't need to do any more planning. But how great is it to look beyond you, to do something for your community, for your world, for the things that, whatever it is that you care about, to think about leaving a legacy. And I'm sure some of these people didn't make enough to be even financially independent themselves. And yet they're out there saving gorillas with the money.
A few extra bucks. It's just like when you have an investment and we tell you, you got to have an out, you know, you got to have a sell strategy. If you're going to be a trader, you've got to have a buying strategy and a selling strategy. I think it's also important to have, like, what do you do with the money strategy? You know, like what's the purpose of all of this stuff? And it can't just be ambiguous around, like, well, I don't know, retirement, because I don't know, different people act differently or kind of think differently, I suppose. But for me, I've always had to have some sort of thing on the horizon that, you know, financially we're working toward. Otherwise it's, you know, that long 30-year goal doesn't seem super exciting. You know, and I know I've got to do it, so I do it, but I'm not super stoked about it. But what I am super stoked about is covering my pergola, because when it rains, I want to sit outside and I know how much it costs and I got to save for it. And I've explored all the different, like, I've done all the research. I know what it's going to be. Like, that's what I'm really excited about right now. So that's what I'm working on. You know, you can do the same thing for giving or the same thing for the results of your investment success as well.
Well, I just think you and I both belong to the same entrepreneurial coaching group called Strategic Coach. And one of the most powerful lessons for me, and you've been coached by Strategic Coach longer than I have, OG, but I think this is still one of the most powerful ones for you. Last Friday, we had a show talking about lifestyle design. This was really, for me, the biggest time when I thought about life, started thinking about lifestyle design. And still today, it's something I think about regularly, but it's, how do you want people to remember you? Who do you want to be? What's your legacy going to be? And man, just having that time where we were forced is a strong word, but you know what I mean? I'm in a group of people and I'm being coached to think about that.
Right.
All of a sudden I realized all these things that were really important to me outside of, yeah, I want to fire by the time I'm X age, or I, you know, hope to get this for just myself, get a little bit away from me into, I almost said me into we, and that just sounds so hokey. I went from me to we.
You sound like an Adidas t-shirt. You need a greater symbol, greater or less than symbol.
Or just a TM on that thing.
I think Adidas already got the TM.
Oh, do they?
You have to, oh, I'm certain of it. It's like a March Madness t-shirt. That's why it
came. Oh, is it?
Oh. Yeah, we is greater than me.
Oh.
TM.
TM. How about Adidas greater than me? TM. No. Powerful stuff. I think that's a good takeaway. In fact, we'll have our takeaways, OG and I both, in just a moment from our headlines. But first, I think a good takeaway for all of us is that if you don't belong to a credit union and you have one locally, you should look into it, because credit unions in general, we're going to do soon a show just about all the things that credit unions can do for you, because there's so many different things. And Navy Federal Credit Union, they don't just serve the Navy. They also serve people from the Army, Marine Corps, Air Force, Coast Guard, and even the Space Force. So no matter where you are in your military career, they offer products and resources to help you navigate your finances, like the Navy Federal More Rewards American Express Card, which offers 3 times points at supermarkets, food delivery, and gas, plus 1 point on everything else. Now, only use credit cards for points if you're going to pay off your bill in full every month. But that means when you go shopping, when you buy gasoline, you're going to get 3 times points for those things. You'll enjoy special perks and points you can redeem for cash, travel, gift cards, and more, plus earn bonus points. Learn more about how you can get 25,000 points, $250 value when you open a Navy Federal More Rewards American Express card today. Visit NavyFederal.org for more details and to apply. Insured by NCUA, American Express is a registered service mark of American Express used by Navy Federal under license. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. I think, OG, biggest takeaway from the headlines?
For me, you got to know what you're reading.
All that glitters is not Goldman.
There you go.
As Spencer so eloquently says. And I think mine is play the bigger game. Play the game beyond you. Figure out what saving your own gorilla looks like. We've got a very special show today. We've had some members of our community that have done some fantastic stuff, and we're going to begin with Alan. Alan, by the way, OG, is a gentleman who wrote us a question. And I don't remember if you were there on this particular day. I remember Sandy Smith was on the round table. It was a Friday. And Alan left us a question asking us if we thought that hacking reward points as a side hustle would be sustainable. And if you could make more than $10,000 a year doing that, and if you could continue doing it. Were you on that round table?
I have no recollection of that, Senator.
Yeah, I don't think that you were there. But overwhelmingly, Sandy, Len, and Paula then said, no, that is absolutely not sustainable, and we don't think you can do it. And Alan went in the basement Facebook group. If you want to hang out with us there, we have a lot of fun. StackyBenjamins.com/basement will give you the link to get you there. But he showed his strategy. He said, hey, thanks for answering my question. And
you teed me up perfectly.
Yeah. And I agree with a lot of people that might not be. And I said, man, this is really cool. So he showed his spreadsheet. He showed what he did. And I said, you want to come on the show and talk about it? Tell everybody exactly how you're doing this. So let's say hi to him, get him on Dad Shortwave and see if he can share his knowledge. Here's our friend Alan. And on my dad's shortwave, it's our friend Alan Leopold. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, I'm so glad that you said you would come on and talk about this. You, of course, wrote us the note to the Haven Lifeline asking if this were a possibility. We overwhelmingly, as you know, said probably not. And then you came on and said, thanks for the note. You came into the basement and said, thanks for the note. Here's exactly what I'm doing. And I want to walk through how you do this, because I know, as you know, this is something that a lot of people think about. They wonder about hacking reward points. Tell me how you got started, though. When did you first decide this might be a thing for you?
In December 2016, I had been out of debt for about a year. I paid everything off.
So you decided, let's get a bunch of credit cards and get back in debt.
Right. Well, and I just kept on hearing people talk about like the, oh, you can get 2% cash back. And, as long as you're paying your bill off right away, you're going to gain some money that way. And so I went ahead and jumped into that and got the double cash card. And I ran that for just a couple of years. And it would amount to maybe $600, $700 a year. And that was covering like camping fees and stuff like that. Well, then on your broadcast, and I heard it one time on Dave Ramsey, somebody talked about churning bank accounts. And I'm like, what's this churning thing? So I started looking it up and started reading about it. And it's like, oh yeah, people, you know, cause I had an emergency fund sitting there doing nothing. And so they're like, oh yeah, if you've got, and I've got direct deposit through my work and I can configure it whenever I want to. So then in March of 2018, I started the bank account churning.
Let's talk for a second for everybody about how that works. So churning bank accounts, banks give these promotional offers of paying you money to change your bank over to them. Usually, as long as, to your point, it comes with direct deposit. And the reason they do that is because bank accounts are usually pretty sticky. They think you're going to hook up your Netflix to it, hook up your utilities to it, and then it's a pain in the ass to get out. So then they got you. So it usually pays off. But for you, about how much money did you see banks offering when you started doing that?
They would range from $150 to $500, depending on, you know, what kind of accounts you're looking for.
And how much money did you have to move over to them, Alan, to do that?
A lot of times the minimum balances were maybe $100 to $200.
Oh, so not, you know,
not a lot of money. And then, but you had to like hook a direct deposit up to it. And so I was able to do that through work, no problem. And usually that would go for 60 to 90 days that you have to have the direct deposit hitting.
Sorry to keep interrupting you, but do you work at a place where you can direct deposit to more than one place?
Yeah. It's no asking HR. It's all done electronically. But then I found people, you know, that were struggling in the different Facebook groups with that is that a lot of these places like everybankbonus.com and Doctor of Credit will have a list of the banks that you can make transfers from that will replicate like a direct deposit. And so that's, you know, open it up to that many more people that can try it out.
Wow. So about how much money in that first year did you make by just churning bank accounts?
So in 2018, I opened up 17 accounts and I made $2,750.
Wow. Well, that brings up two questions. Question one is, how long did it take you to open up those accounts?
The time to get them open is probably maybe 10 minutes.
Oh.
And what I did is I kind of tried to keep track of how much time I was spending on it. And I figured it took me about 2 hours between the time of setting it up, meeting the requirements, you know, tracking, and then closing the account out. And usually you close it after 6 months. A lot of times they require you hold it for 6 months, sometimes a year before you can close it out. But I figured 2 hours per bank account to do that.
With 17 different accounts, how do you keep track of it?
Spreadsheet.
Okay.
Spreadsheet.
Pretty rigorous spreadsheet, I would imagine.
Yep. I just have a Google sheet that's set up and it has all the information as far as what the minimum balance is because you want to avoid any fees. So whatever the minimum was, that's what I would put in there. Or if it had direct deposit was, you know, to avoid the fees, I'd do that.
So $2,700 in a year.
For the first year. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, well, that's pretty awesome. It definitely a lot more money than just my 2% cashback card that I was getting, you know, from, Citi. And so then the next year I thought, well, I'm going to try this because everybody said, well, the money is where, you know, is in the credit cards. Go after the credit cards and get the, you know, cash bonuses. I wasn't interested in miles. So in 2019, I opened up only 4 checking accounts and I made $1,225, but I opened up 5 credit cards and made $3,153.70.
Wow. So that was much bigger money.
Yeah, much, much better.
That also shows you, just as an aside for all of our stackers, that's also an aside of where the bank's bread's buttered, right? The bank makes a lot more money on the credit card than they do on the checking account. So they're going to offer you much bigger rewards.
Yep, definitely. And then that's when we came into 2020. We opened it up and I did 21 checking accounts and that was about $6,300. And then I did 7 credit cards. That was around $4,500. And that's when I hit my 10,000.
Do you find banks say no because they know you? Like, do you ever find yourself going back to the well a second time for either a credit card, a bonus, or for a bank account?
I just recently started going through my old ones because usually with banks, you have to wait with bank accounts, usually 12 to 24 months before you can reapply. Credit cards are similar to that. They can make you 2, 3, maybe even 3 or 4 years before you can reapply. But I went to Chase. He's like, did you used to have an account here? It was like 3 years ago. I'm like, yeah, you know, but the business kind of, you know, picked back up again. And so, okay. And then they just opened it up again.
They did. And they gave you the reward again.
Yep. Doing it again. And that's the thing is that you got to wait that full 24 months usually. or 12 or 24 months. But the idea is that they need that money to be able to lend out and do other things with.
Now, each of those cards has a minimum spend, right? So tell me about spending the minimum to get the bonus.
Gas and groceries, the dining out. I'll put my Amazon, I'll put that on there. My utilities, my cell phone, all that kind of stuff. And it's easy. I can go through for myself and in our situation, it's probably $1,500 a month. So hitting that $3,000 spend in 3 months, no problem. And what we found is we could hit that in 2 months. And by the time I was hitting the second month, I was already applying for the next card.
Wow. And the second that you hit the spend limit, then you're pulling all that money off and applying it to the next thing.
Yep. You wait for it to post. And on the credit card side, you wait for it to post, and then you can go ahead and pull that. You know, they'll ask you if they want to check. And some of them will do a statement credit, and that's fine. You know, you still got to pay your expenses. So it's not like I'm buying anything extra because of this. But then I keep them for just about a year, because right before the annual fee hits, that's usually when I'll just go ahead and close it. I'll just contact them and say, yeah, I decided it's not going to work for us. They're like, okay.
And you keep track of that on a spreadsheet too then?
Yeah, same spreadsheet that has the date open, the date closed, to when the bonus posted. And, you know, and if I got the bonus, if there was any issue or anything, but I've been very fortunate not to lose out on any bonuses unless I read something wrong.
I was going to ask about ever paying any fees. Have you found that you've paid any fees at all along the way, get mixed up and pay interest or something?
Oh, yeah. There's, you know, I had one where I didn't read the statement that you had to turn your statements to online. Since then, I haven't really paid them because you just contact them and say, hey, I made a mistake. Can I get a courtesy credit? And they'll credit you. They want to keep you as a customer, you know, sure. And so that's been helpful on that part.
You said earlier that you're not interested in miles. Why no miles? Because you got everything you want there in Baraboo?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Why would you want to leave? No, my wife doesn't like to fly at all or very little. And so, but cash will take you everywhere. And we do a lot of camping and stuff like that. So, you know, we can use that cash wherever we need to. We've done work on our house with it. We've used it this last year was to help beef up our Roth IRA so we can max them out. So it carries nicer.
It fills your wallet better. Who is this bad for? Like who seriously is going to get in trouble playing this game that you play?
Being disorganized. You've got to be able to be organized as far as, and I only would do like one credit card at a time. You know, I'd hit the max on that one, then I'd get the new credit card, then switch it over to the next one. But you can't just run a bunch of them at one time because it's going to get confusing. Same thing with the checking account. I figure out how much of my direct deposit, you know, is divvied out among the 3-4 banks or whatever. So I just sit on that and wait until I hit those numbers, and then I move on to the next one. But you've got to be organized. Or else it's going to burn you.
Absolutely. And you made, I wasn't doing the math, between credit cards and checking accounts last year. How much did you make, Alan?
It was a little over 10 grand.
Wow. And you asked us the question. We said we didn't think that was sustainable. Do you think it's sustainable?
Absolutely. Because they want your business. And even if you set it up and do it, you know, over a 2-year period and then come on back and set them up again, they're more than happy to take your money. I had worked in the banking business for about 13 years, and I know that there would be times where they would be pushing to get more people to bring in more deposits because that helps us be able to loan more money out. And as long as you stay organized, you can do really well with this. And that's my thought is to run this all the way into retirement, or hopefully early retirement. We'll see.
You could even do it in retirement.
Yeah.
Why stop?
Exactly. You know, and then we've been able to do more things, you know, as far as donating stuff. Because of that, and just worked out really well. When I was paying off all my debt, and even, you know, I was just sick with the amount of interest and everything that I was paying out. And after I finally paid it off for like another couple of years, I was pretty sick about that interest. And when I discovered this whole churning thing, I was like, this is a way to get your money back. And that's my goal. I want to get all that interest, you know, all that stuff that I made mistakes on, I want it back.
You're clawing it back from Bank of America.
Exactly. Exactly. Every single one of them.
Big thanks to Alan for sharing that information. And I know we said it 3 times, but if you don't pay your credit cards off every month in full.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing.
Yeah. Or if you don't keep that detailed spreadsheet like he does, OG, this could be a very dangerous game.
Yeah. The thing that would, where I would blow up on this. And we've had lots of credit card points in our lifetime and done lots of sign-up bonuses. But, you know, every company is going to be different on how they allow you to get them and not get them and the rules and all that sort of stuff. I think what he talked about of keeping track of that particular stuff of, you know, here's the spending plan and here's the, you know, here's when I'm going to cancel it and here's when I can reapply for it and here's the best offer that I can get and all that sort of stuff. You have to be that meticulous about it. Hey, if you're going to treat it like a side hustle, it's got to be a side hustle. It can't just be like a thing that you just nonchalantly do. I do like the banking thing because I don't know about you, but it seems like it comes in waves. Like every 2 or 3 months, I'll get stuff from different banks. Like, hey, sign up for the savings account, get $300. Get a new checking account, $400. And I always throw them in the trash. And I was thinking about it the other day, maybe because we were talking about this show.
About Alan, yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to start looking into this a little bit. By me looking into it, what I mean is I made OG, Mrs. OG do it.
Nice.
And, yeah. And I said, hey, babe, check this out.
Why this is a great idea for quote us.
This is a great idea for quote us. Yeah. So she's taking the first two of them.
She is doing it.
And she's like, yeah, I'll read it, you know, because she's super detail oriented. So we have control over our paychecks because I work for myself. So if I've got to change direct deposit or something like that, I can do that. And so she's kind of helping kind of manage all that and telling me what to do. But we're up $700 already.
Well, and I think that's what really helps Alan too, because he can have direct deposit to multiple places where he works. That's great. I mean, he can do three of these at one time with direct deposit if he wants to. I think that's super cool. So thanks again to Alan for sharing that. We got, and we're just going to potpourri this, but I got a great note from John who said that on our March 26 show, a listener asked what happens with a stock and a company that's been taken private. Company goes private. What's the deal with that? And we answered her. I also think that was a roundtable show. And I don't think you were on that one either, OG.
Sounds like I've been slacking lately.
And we shared with a woman that when a company goes private, it's for a price that was pre-approved. And one day in your brokerage account, you just see cash. And it's a day that they publish ahead of time. So if you're really paying attention, you'll know what day the cash is coming, but you get paid out for your shares when a company gets taken private. He said, your answer was great, but it reminded me of a stock I owned in Raytheon company 2+ decades ago. Raytheon's board conducted a reverse 1-for-20 stock split, followed immediately by a forward 20-for-1 split. Since fractions of shares get converted to cash in these corporate stock splits, the intent of the board was to get rid of smaller shareholders like me. The board did so at a very low point in the stock price. They wanted to get rid of me on the cheap. I had no choice about keeping or selling the stock. Made me so mad that I swore I would never buy Raytheon stock again. I invested instead in another defense-related company, United Technologies. Last year, UTX and Raytheon merged. So again, I own Raytheon stock. Great. Best laid plans of mice and men. That's awesome. I can't stand the company. Going to go buy their competitor. And bam, I had something similar. I don't know if you remember this, OG, but I owned XM. And in the early days, XM went from 3 to 30. And I had taken this little bit of money and now it's a much, 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 much bigger sum of money. So I decided I was going to take half of it. I was going to keep half because I liked satellite radio and I was going to diversify the other half. Well, being a believer in satellite radio, I took the other half and I bought Sirius with it.
Obviously.
And then both the companies loaded up with debt. The two of them merged and I then owned all the shares that I had. So I wrote them up and I wrote them back down.
And now you're bouncing off the bottom. Has it gone back up? I don't even know.
I sold it. I got it back up a little bit and pulled the trigger when I finally came to my senses and said, you know what? Paying attention to the debt load of a company makes a lot of sense.
Also important.
Investing strategy.
Yeah. Goldman wrote a report on that once too.
I saw this thing that Rob Goldman wrote about it. Goldman. Mm-hmm. All right. Next, we were asking people for some wins, things that they had done. We have Mom Show and Tell in our Facebook group. And our friend Claudia did something that you just don't see, OG. She helped both her parents and her in-laws get their financial house in order. She and her husband have over the last few years really gotten their house in order. And Claudia and her husband had their parents come to them and say, can you help us? Which I think is a super powerful thing. And as you know, that can also be a harrowing experience. But she took her father-in-law to meet with a financial planner, which a lot of people wonder what that meeting's about. So I said, hey, Claudia, please help us out. And she was gracious enough to say that she would. So our friend from the Basement Facebook group, and I'm glad I finally get to meet her, Claudia Gonzalez is with us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Joe?
Well, I'm better now that I get to talk to you. You know, we sit here in the basement and make shows, and you never get to talk to our family. And it feels like we're talking to a long lost friend. So that's really fun. But you did something that I thought was very cool. You helped, was it your parents, your in-laws get their financial plan together? Or was it both?
It was actually both. It was actually in the same week that the timing just worked out that way. But my father-in-law had asked my husband and I to help because he's got money saved. He doesn't have any debt. He's 73 now, doesn't plan on ever stopping, ever retiring. He's just going to work until he dies is what he says. He just had this lump sum of money sitting in a bank account with earning cents a year. And so he kind of got tired of that and said, okay, I'm ready to talk about what it is you guys do and how you guys invest it. And let's chat about it. Neither of our parents live locally, so we had to travel there. So we traveled to the Houston area where he's at. It just so happened that my mom had some doctor's appointments in Houston that week and came, you know, kind of followed us here back to where we live. And then we tackled their issues.
But it's so strange of parents to reach out to their kids. I just don't see that very much. I mean, it seems like a very brave thing that your father-in-law did, even asking kids for help. Why do you think he reached out to you? Because that seems very open.
So we didn't really start being really good with our money until maybe, I guess it's been about 3 years now. And until then, we didn't have any major debt or anything, but we were just kind of spending what we made. And, you know, we put a little into 401ks and deferred comps, but it wasn't intentional. It was just sort of like, yeah, we'll put that much in. There was no plan around it. Once we got a plan, we started actually with Dave Ramsey. Since then, my husband's just like was on a high. Like he just wanted to tell everybody about it because he wanted to solve everybody's financial problems. It's been about 3 years that he's been telling his dad, like, Dad, you know, Dad, we can do this. There's so much you can do. And so it's taken about 3 years of him bringing it up in conversation for my father-in-law to say, okay, let's see what you've got. Tell me about it.
But a lot of the time when people do that, right, it kind of feels like when my brother went into the multi-level marketing thing, like people get so excited about Dave Ramsey that I go, no, I don't want to hear any of that. Was it that way with people at first or not?
Well, he definitely got that a lot. I'm telling you, he was on a high. I didn't quite go to that level. I just kind of kept it to myself. I liked what we were doing and I felt much more in control of our money, but I didn't need to tell the world about it. My husband was just excited because he's just that kind of person. When he knows something, he wants to share it. And so he definitely got that like from some coworkers when he would bring it up. They're like, don't want to hear it. And that's fine. He would let it go. But his dad, he doesn't have any background in this. He doesn't know who Dave Ramsey is. He doesn't have any opinion of him one way or another. So, you know, he would just kind of like, yeah. You know, initially, I think he was just the, yeah, okay, son, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
After about, like I said, it's been about 2 or 3 years. Then he finally said like, okay, well, let's talk about it. Let's see what we can do. And with my parents, I don't think I've ever even mentioned that name to them or anything, but I did tell her that we're doing a lot better with our money now. We're budgeting. We know where it's going, where it's more intentional. And so I would ask my mom every so often, well, what is your budget, Mom? Well, how much do y'all spend it? You know, because they were starting to talk about my mom retiring. She retired about a year and a half ago. And so they were starting to talk about that and how they were going to manage it. You know, light conversations, not real specific or deep. And so that was my thing with my parents. I kept pushing was, you know, have some sort of budget so you know how much you need to retire, you know, so you know what you can do or can't do. Does dad need to work part time or can he just quit, you know, that sort of thing. And so with those conversations, and then, you know, we would mention it like if we were taking a trip somewhere or whatever, we'd be like, oh, yeah, well, we budget for it. So we'll do it next month or something like that. And so I would try to mention those things to my parents. Kids are my parents, of course, I felt comfortable with them and not to tell them things like that. And so I think over time, and my husband, I'm sure when he and my dad were like out working or something, planting trees or something, he would give his spiel. And so that brought them around to come to us.
That's great, though, because I think the keys are, I mean, it's brought up lightly. And you're talking about we have to budget for that kind of a little bit around the corners,
not so nail on the head, also not judgy talk. I find a lot of times people have this judgment attached to the talk when you think somebody needs to do something with their money. You had them meet with a financial planner, I think you said. How did that go? Because a lot of people, as you know, in our community are afraid of meeting with a financial planner. They've never done it. Like, just tell people what that experience was like and how it went.
So we did that for our father-in-law. We set up two meetings with two different financial planners in his area. So with my father-in-law, he feels like, you guys just tell me what to do. And so we wanted to make sure that he sat down and we were translating as we went through, because he's primarily a Spanish speaker. So we translated as we went through because we wanted him to understand everything that was being said and kind of get a feel for them.
I'm glad you said that, by the way, just to stop for a second, Claudia, there, because when I was a financial planner, I would have clients come into my office and they would literally say that to me. They'd say, I just want you to handle it. You don't have to tell me what, just, I trust you. And I'm like, no, 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 no. If I get hit by a bus tomorrow, you're back where you were before you met me. So unfortunately, I am going to teach you how all this crap works. I apologize at a time. But anyway, keep going.
Well, you know, as we're going through, we had two meetings in one day. Our plan, or really my plan, because I'm the one that I'm an itinerary person. We've got this many hours for this, and then we're going here and this, we're doing that. And so my plan was to still talk about it, you know, once we got off with the financial planners, to talk about it for another 2 hours. And my father-in-law was like, I'm done. Like, this is enough. We can talk about it tomorrow. We can talk about it next week, but, you know, I'm done. That's one thing that we didn't really take into consideration. But yeah, this is like all new to him, and it's a lot to learn, you know, in one city. And so we had to like, okay, well, we'll circle back to this. So that's kind of where we're at with my father-in-law. We're giving him some time to think about it. And then,
you know, but you were in both of those meetings?
Yes. I sat in with him in both of the meetings. Yeah. One went really well. He, you know, the financial planner explained, you know, his options and spoke to us about like long-term plans. And I mean, he was just very thorough, very down to earth. And it was easy for us to be able to explain what he was saying to my father-in-law and translate that.
Yes.
The other one didn't go quite so well, but
but that's good. I like that, because often when people have the wrong help in their corner, they will often say, I don't need help, right? This means that all help's bad. And my pushback always is, I think having smart people in your corner, it doesn't have to be a financial planner, by the way, but having smart people in your corner makes a ton of sense. For your father-in-law, having you two in his corner, I think makes a lot of sense. Really, in some ways, you kind of are his financial planner in some ways, because he's going to take your he's going to take your word for it. So having those people, so if your help sucks, my feeling always is your interview skills suck. Right? You got to do better interviewing. So I love that you compared two, but do you think he's reached his limit? Or maybe it sounds like the one might be a great fit.
Yeah, I think we do have one that's a good fit. Although I still think that we're going to have to be pretty involved with him as well.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't expect him to be calling my father-in-law every so often or checking in to make sure, like, you understand, right? You understand, right? And that's what I feel our role is, because it's a lot for him to take in. And in fact, not too long ago, he was still keeping, you know, money in a safe at home because he didn't know whether he should really deposit it into a bank. So these are the giant steps that we've taken in maybe the last 5 or 6 years. So for him to now be talking bonds and equities, it's kind of like,
You're in a whole different planet now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you just blew baby steps out of the water, Claudia, to go back to Dave Ramsey. Baby steps. Yeah. Well, thanks for talking about it. Congratulations on the open discussions. I just don't see it very often. And I was so thrilled when you wrote about it and just sharing your story. I think that's awesome. So thank you for helping make the Stackers a stronger community.
Thanks, Joe.
Big thanks to Claudia. Isn't that great? Helping parents and in-laws.
Yeah, you don't hear that too much, because usually it's the other way around or not at all.
Right. Yeah. Or parents like, stay out of my money. No, what the hell are you doing? Or they take it the wrong way. But just that is so super cool.
I think that's also the lesson too about, you know, what if this is your jam, we're sometimes guilty of it. We try to kind of dial it back when necessary. But, you know, when you're with your people and you're talking about your stuff and you're like, oh, and then I did my mega backdoor Roth IRA conversion, my HSA max, dude. You know, that's your people. You're talking the language. But then you get to some other people who are brand new at this, and they don't have any idea what you're talking about. They have zero idea what you're talking about. And notwithstanding the language barrier that she mentioned, there's also the other language barrier of
the it's jargon, just not a thing. Jargon barrier. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's a lesson in remembering that if you're going to bring somebody along with you, and please do on this journey that you're trying to, you know, you're trying to get better money wise. We're all trying to get better money wise, you know, and you can bring somebody with you. Sometimes you got to start at the beginning and you can't expect them to keep up with you. Like, you can't expect them to be where you are immediately. There's a phrase that that I've heard recently, and I don't know if it applies. Oh, I guess it applies to money too. I didn't hear it in this category, but it was something like, don't compare your middle to someone else's end. And I think it can go the other way too. Like, don't compare your middle of the pack, you're halfway down the field, to somebody else's beginning. Remember that you also at one point in time had no idea what a mutual fund was or why it was even necessary to have one, or turnover ratios in your ETFs and why it mattered. And sometimes, and advisors are guilty of this too. I try really hard at it not to do it. Most of the time I think I'm successful, but you know, we see things that are bad and it's very hard to be like, oh my God, how did you do that?
Yeah.
Hello. What is wrong with you? That was so stupid.
Right.
Now, I don't say that, but if we're not careful, we're going to project the wrong thing, which is, hey, you did something. It's maybe not the best thing, but let's keep on moving in the right direction. So bring somebody along, but remember they're at a different spot than you are.
Yeah. I had Josh Dorkin from Bigger Pockets, the creator of Bigger Pockets, tell me that at a conference. He was telling me about all the stuff they were doing at Bigger Pockets. And I remember looking at like his graphs and going, dude, we are never going to, there's no way that we can build Stacky Benjamins to be any. And by the way, this is not where they are today, which is amazing. This is several years ago when they were really just starting out, but still a rocket ship. And he said the same thing to me. He goes, don't compare my middle to your beginning. Do not do that.
Yeah.
Just take it a day at a time. There's also something to be said here about decision fatigue, right? To realize that people also get decision fatigue. I remember when I was a new financial planner, some good advice that I got was give people three options. And initially I love sharing 45 options about how to do things.
Look at how smart I am.
And it isn't that. It's like, well, if you consider this, or if you think about this, you could do it this way, you could do that, you know? And I get really excited about all these different ways to look at something. But I had a good mentor tell me, give people three. Cause if you give them more than three people, it's just, I get lost. If you give me more than three options, Cheryl asked me what I want for dinner. I'm like, oh, you choose. I don't know. She asked me last night. So we've got, these two different things. Which one of the two? I couldn't make up my mind. So we had the chili.
Well, that's also smart. That's also wisdom. That's many, many years of being married.
Because
the right answer is whatever you decide, honey.
Yes. We got a note from Sarah, who also wanted to say hi. She said, hi, Joe and OG. I love y'all show. Found it many years ago when I was a truck driver a few years ago. By the way, Sarah, I would love to be a truck driver because I love listening to podcasts and listening to old time radio, and there would be no job more suited for me, I think. And I love road trips to the point that I think that OG thinks I'm crazy because of some of the crazy drives that I am thinking about taking. We have some stuff in Michigan, and I think on a upcoming Friday, I'm just going to get up at 3:30 in the morning and drive all day to Michigan. And on Saturday drive back the very next day. But it sounds like fun to me, but not fun to, I know, to a lot of people. But I think about being an over-the-road truck driver and think how, just just a job for me. A few years ago, she said, y'all had a podcast episode, and I believe a guest was talking about if you put $1,000 in a child's account for the first 7 years, it could set them up for retirement. Can you two help me find it to help me decide how to best go about this? If you have any other suggestions regarding setting up accounts or Texas college funds for a child, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you. You guys are the best. Sarah, she said, by the way, she used Grammarly to write this and signed up as soon as she signed up for school. Thank you too for all the life help. I'm so excited to get to hear from you too. And she also said, I love pie. OG, you're so cute for wanting to startle a kid, talking about a conversation that may or may not have happened during an episode recently. If a child was tearing up my front tree, I'm pretty sure I would ask once very nicely for them to stop. However, if I caught the child again, I'd shoot around the child with a paintball gun.
Oh my.
Wow.
No, no. Oh boy. No, 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 no.
Probably not, Sarah. Maybe I'm more grumpy. Maybe I'm more grumpy old man. Like if you take this suggestion and get into trouble, I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
We're not taking that suggestion, Sarah.
Shoot around the kid with a paintball gun. At least it's a paintball gun, I suppose.
No.
We'll just ask nicely. Leave my tree alone.
Yes, please leave the tree alone.
Most of them are dead now anyway because of the kid. The freeze. No, the freeze that happened. And the kid. It's the kid's fault, actually.
It's not the freeze. It's the kid.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sarah, for that. So we did talk to a man, and you're right, Sarah, it was several years ago, Chris Carosa, who is advocated for a long time, a child IRA. And what Chris likes about this, and you and I weighed in saying that we also like this OG, which is that your child has to have some earned income. If they have earned income, you can then put money into an IRA. And if you put money into an IRA when they're very young, so, you know, he's talking about children for these baby pictures for photo companies. There are modeling companies that need children as model at a very young age. Of course, a lot of people worry about privacy. So I think you have to think about what's important to you and your children, but they get to a certain age where they can help out and do things like pick up the trash around your home business, or they walk dogs for the neighbor, something. If they can have some actual earned income that they can show, then they can put money in a child IRA. This is what Chris writes in a piece in Forbes. If parents start a child IRA for their 13-year-old and continue contributing the max of $6,000 a year until child beckons through 18, there's a special prize at the end of the rainbow when that child retires at 70 with no further contributions once the child goes off to college, earning 8% a year. The value of that teenage child IRA is going to grow to nearly $2.5 million by age 70.
Yeah, some pretty good cash.
Just 13 to 18. Save just that. I'll link to this, Sarah, in our show notes page.
I mean, that's a big number, though. $6,000 to make as a 13-year-old, even if you're kind of...
Certainly.
Juicing the numbers, so to speak. But I think the message is the same. If you're thinking about college funding, I was just talking to you before we recorded about college funding. And I said, man, I'm glad I did something. I wasn't financially able to, when my oldest was born, to max out a 529 form, like, and fully fund it. But I'm glad I did something because I've got a pile of money there now, which doesn't seem like a whole bunch when you are putting in $100 or $150 a month.
Yeah,
but it's a lot now. And so the same thing is true for your kid. If you're, you know, it doesn't have to be a retirement account. You can just put in a regular brokerage account, something.
Let compounding do the heavy lifting. All right. So we heard from Alan. We heard from Claudia. We got a great note from Stacker John. John took issue with the fact that I have on a few occasions quoted Dr. Juliet Shore, who came on the show and talked about the sharing economy, OG, and how driving for Uber and for Lyft are not great ways to make money. And the quote sharing economy isn't so much about sharing as it is these tech companies making a lot of money while you go make not a ton of money. And John wrote to me and said, I suggest Joe should stop telling people who drive for Uber, et cetera, that they don't know how to do math, which was, by the way, in fairness to me, it was a direct quote from Dr. Shore, but I liked it. I've done the math and it's a profitable endeavor, especially if you drive a reasonably fuel efficient car and you optimize the times you drive. And he goes into how he makes money driving for Uber. And I thought, you know what, OG, let's find out. Let's find out from John how to be successful as a driver, because clearly there definitely still is some math involved. My correspondence with John, man, he's done the math. So let's pick the lock on ride sharing and say hello to my new friend, John Goldstein. How are you, man?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Now that you're here, when did you start driving for companies like Uber?
I started back about 4 years ago.
How come?
I was working the Dave Ramsey plan, getting gazelle intense and trying to pay off some debt. So just looking for some extra income.
Nice. Now, why drive versus other things? Did you look at other ways to make money besides driving?
Yeah, mainly W-2 work. And with that, I didn't get the flexibility I was looking for. I have kids and a family and trying to get a stable schedule along with my main job where I'd be working overtime at random times. A W-2 job with a fixed schedule really wouldn't work for me.
So do you drive just for Uber or do you do Lyft also or Uber Eats or DoorDash or?
I kept it simple. I didn't want to complicate my life too much. I just drive for Uber, but I know I have a friend who drives for Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, Uber Eats. He does it all.
When I talk to people that drive, and this is part of, you know, the conversation that Juliet Shore and I had that you wrote me about, which was she's like, they're taking most of the money. It's so difficult to make money. I quoted her as saying that people that drive don't know the math. You wrote me back and said the math can be pretty good if you know when to drive. Explain that to me. How did you calculate when and where to drive?
Well, I started driving 7 days a week. And generally in my area, the weeknights aren't very busy. So I just focus my time on Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday at times. So those were the most profitable. You'd get surge pricing on those and it tend to work out pretty good.
So for you and your family, then you talked about having kids. Do you guys then make Wednesday night the Goldstein family Saturday night?
Yep. We would pick a night during the week and focus on family on those nights.
Yeah. So you started off then driving all 7 days to figure out which days were the top days. So there was a little bit of exploration there, I'm assuming, or I don't know, scientific method, trying out the different days. How much yep. more on the weekend do you make than on the weekdays?
It depends, but generally around double, I would say.
Wow. And are there certain times on the weekend for you?
Yeah, just whenever I have time, but generally it's after 6 p.m. at night and I can go anywhere from midnight to 4 a.m. if I have enough energy.
This is way off topic, dude, but you have to have some things happen in your car at 2 a.m. that you don't see at 6 p.m.
Yeah, people have stories and yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
Maybe slightly intoxicated, maybe.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So walk me through then, you said you have a spreadsheet. Walk me through how you make money and what you track.
Well, I go through, I figure out, you know, what the IRS standard mileage deduction is for your mileage. It's 56 cents per mile in 2021. Got my federal and state rates, FICA, and then the Section 199A deduction, which is 20% deduction on your self-employment income. So, and then I went and actually calculated my true cost for my vehicle, and I come up to about 12 cents per mile. I have a 2014 Toyota Camry. So the trick is to drive a semi-reliable and fuel-efficient vehicle, and you get the mileage arbitrage between what the IRS gives you as a deduction and what your actual costs are. So you go through and you figure it out, and my tax basis hourly earnings were $11.69, and my cash basis earnings were $19.45. And if I back into what I'd have to make for W-2 wages to net the $19.45, I would have to earn $30.63 to back into my W-2 wages. So for me, that works. It's flexible. And I don't know if I could find another job part-time to make that kind of earnings.
To make 30 bucks an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's some powerful stuff. The key for you then is making sure you know when to drive. But that still means if you said that it's double, then I assume that if you drove on a weekday night, are you making 15?
Yeah, about $15 an hour, which still isn't terrible.
Yeah.
It's better than nothing.
Yeah. You know, you hear these stories in other areas where people say that even after the depreciation on the vehicle, between even the tax advantages they get and everything, that they feel like they're making $3-4 an hour, not getting much driving done. They also have a lot of competition for driving in their area. Because of that, Uber and Lyft paying them lower and lower and lower dollars every year than the year before. It sounds like you're not seeing that in Omaha.
No, I'm fine with it. Uber does take their cut, but I'm still coming out way ahead than the alternative.
Do you think that that's city specific, or do you think wherever you drive, that if you just do some of the math that you've done, that you can make it work?
I think a lot of it does depend on what market you're driving in. I know there are some places that are busy 7 days a week, and then a small town, you may not get it. So there's a reason there's no crab fishermen in Nebraska. It just doesn't make any money. So you got to experiment with different things and figure out what makes money and what makes sense. So if it's not working for you, find something else.
Well, I think there's another key here too, John, which is that you also have taken advantage of the tax implications. I mean, you're treating this like a side business and making sure that you're writing off your expenses. And I think, you know, you talk to some of these people, you get the feeling they're not doing that.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Do you have tax help? Do you have a tax background? How do you keep track of your taxes every year for driving?
The app tracks it all. I'm actually a CPA during the day. So
nice.
It works out.
I was going to say that might help just a little bit. Yeah. But I think for somebody who's not a CPA, you think it's good to have a tax pro helping you make sure that you catch everything?
I think most of the tax software out there is pretty good at capturing everything. Your main things are you're getting your mileage, which the companies will give to you. Anytime you're logged on, it'll track your mileage for you. Little things like taking a portion of your cell phone plan and deducting that. Car chargers and accessories and stuff that you buy, bottled water, if you give it to your passengers, you can deduct all that. So
Spotify.
Sure.
Well, if you're playing it in the car while you're driving, I would think that that would be a thing. About how much money do you think that you'll make this year driving? Are you comfortable sharing that?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a anomaly for this year. We're having new kids, but generally speaking, I make about $3,000 or $4,000 a year.
Wow.
Driving, and it's super part-time. It's whenever I have time around the family activities and when I'm busy with my main job.
In other years, how much have you made? Is that, when you say it's an anomaly, is that that's a low year, I'm assuming then?
Yeah. If I really put the pedal to the metal, and I can make 10, 15 grand if I worked all hours of the night and evenings and weekends.
Yeah. Now, have you thought about comparing that to other, I know you said, you know, it's $30 an hour, but we've talked on our show before about, you know, starting your own brand, starting your own side business instead. People that own like an Etsy shop, or they own something where they sell stuff themselves and they're not giving that huge amount of money over to Uber. Have you looked into creating your own business versus doing something like Drive, or is this just a short-term thing?
It's probably a short-term thing. I've thought about starting my own business. I know sometimes starting your own business can take some time to cash flow.
Yeah.
So getting the cash to pay down debts and save for retirement and whatnot. So I wanted that immediate cash flow. I think as I grow older, I'm going to start transitioning to building a brand and whatnot there. So
that's good stuff. And you and I spoke before we hit record. You're in Omaha, Nebraska, and you've had friends that have met Mr. Buffett.
Got a photo taken with him and Mark Cuban.
That's fantastic. Yeah. John, anything that we forgot that we should talk about?
I just have some ways to increase profitability.
Excellent.
If you decide to drive for Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, learning how to do your own car maintenance can help save some costs. Using cashback credit cards to buy gas. My wife just opened up the Discover 5% card and she gets double cash back. So right in this next quarter, Q2 of 21, we're getting 10% cash back.
Wow.
Other cards are the Wells Fargo Propel at 3% and Verizon has a 4%. Use the gas savings apps like Gas Buddy and GetUpside. Take advantage of any promotions that they're offering. Sometimes they'll give you a bonus for completing so many rides in a certain time period. Earn more at your W-2 job. The higher your federal marginal tax rate is, the more profitable it becomes for you.
Meaning that tax break becomes better because you're adding on at a higher rate anyway.
Yeah, your W-2 equivalent job wages would have to be higher because your tax rate's higher.
Gotcha.
So because you can get the deductions and all that with the self-employment, it actually works out better the more you make. Next on the list is run multiple apps and switch between them. And then use the destination feature.
You're talking about like Uber, run Uber and Lyft and the other companies at the same time.
Yeah. Yep, you can turn them off if you get a ping for one, and then turn them back on when you're waiting. I've never done that, but.
Well, and it also seems like, based on what you said earlier, you should go through the same process that you went through yourself, or which is figure out with each of them when the optimal times are to drive for that company, when you're probably going to get the surge pricing and actually make good money.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. Next on the list is use the destination feature for personal tasks. So if I'm running to Home Depot to pick up something, I'll set that as my destination and get the mileage deduction for that. So I'm converting personal mileage into business mileage. And if I get a ride along the way, it's extra spending money. So it's kind of nice. And then my brother-in-law opened up a brewery, and I would give out coupons to go see the brewery. And if we talked about starting a personal brand and promotion, I know there's people who do photography on the side, and they'll give out their business card while they give Uber rides. So that's just another way to kind of like stack some of the, you know, make it more profitable for you if you have other things going on.
Do you have to watch out at all? Is there anything in the Uber or Lyft agreement that you have with them that prohibits you from doing any of that stuff? How does that read?
Not that I've read.
Okay.
So right. I think it's okay.
I did have a guy, I had a guy in San Diego. I didn't remember what he was telling me about, but at the end he made sure that he gave me his card and was, I don't know. The one thing I didn't like was I signed up for an Uber ride and I got a sales pitch, you know, on the way there. I was like, oh man, come on. If somebody starts drawing me multi-level marketing circles while they're driving,
that could be a problem. Yeah,
that could be. That's awesome. Those are great, John. Thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us though, and talking about making money driving, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks to John and calculating the tax advantages, OG, an important part of driving. I think that says a lot about treating your business as if it's a business, right? Your side hustle. But then also, I love that he experimented with different times. Experiment with different times to drive and find success.
I remember talking to a real estate person in Dallas. You know, real estate is kind of a around the clock type of business also, right? You just kind of work when there's work, when people want to see houses and whatever, except he only drove Uber on Friday night and Saturday night to and from the airport. Because he said in Dallas at the time, anyway, obviously it's, you know, things change, but at the time he could make $1,000 a week just driving Uber Friday night and Saturday night, just hanging around the airport, waiting for somebody to get the ride back to the city, coming home, you know, or getting ride home from the long, you know, the long work trip. He said he would do it till he made $500 for the day, and then he would quit. So his thing was, I'm just going to do it until I make $500 and then I'm done. Sometimes that would be a couple of trips and there were some big long ones and I got knocked out by midnight or 12:30. And then sometimes it took me until 2:30 in the morning, but I'm going to do it till I make $1,000 for the week.
I love that suggestion of turning on his ride sharing when he knows he's got to go a certain way anyway. Hey, if I'm driving down to Home Depot, why wouldn't I drive somebody in that direction and make some money on my way to go do a trip that I was going to do at the same time?
Yep.
That was compelling for me. Well, I don't have any interest in driving a lot. If I'm already going a certain direction, getting paid to do it makes a lot of sense. And from some of the drivers that I've driven with, they say they just love meeting new people too.
If that's your jam.
That can be a lot of fun. Not for you. All right. You and I got to refill the coffee. We're going to hand this over to Doug for some trivia. We'll be back with the Haven Lifeline and more in just a minute.
Hey, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Claudia and John were great, weren't they? But isn't Alan on to something with this credit card hacking thing? 10,000 in rewards in 1 year? Are you kidding me? Well, I was actually so pumped about this story that in the last 7 minutes, I've applied for 5 new cards of my own to get those rewards pumping. You can only earn if you spend, though, right? So I've been spending like a madman. I got a couple of questions for Alan to make sure I'm on the right path, though. But before I go, let's get you today's trivia. Since today was supposed to be the day before taxes were due, how about some tax nerd trivia, huh? What are the income limits to be able to contribute to a Roth IRA in 2020? You know, for the taxes you're going to file by May 15th? I'll be back with the answer faster than you can file early, because, I mean, come on. If you're like me, you're not gonna.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. Oh, God. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right. U.S. Cellular, a company that sells phones, wants us to put down our phones and to see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union can help you earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you could start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. How many certificates do that? Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project, maybe you want to consolidate debt. As you're putting your debt strategy together, you could borrow up to 100% of your home equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing cost, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Both options could help you make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA. Equal housing lender, membership required, terms and conditions apply, loans subject to approval.
Hey, Stackers. You know, so a little unexpected bad news. I just got done talking with Alan, and apparently part of this whole reward card strategy is that you actually have to pay off the cards. There's no free points, which I got to remark makes this whole thing a hell of a lot less exciting. But you know, old Doug, where there's a game, Doug's got a plan. So how about this little novel ditty? Here we go. When I spend money, all I need to do is open another credit card and pay off my first credit card with the money from the second credit card, and then pay that credit card off with my third card. It's foolproof. It's brilliant. And I'm going to have to do a little more math, but so far, the way I see it, flawless. Am I right? All right, let's get back to today's trivia. The question was, what are the income limits to be able to contribute to a Roth IRA in 2020? There are actually two right answers to this one. Single, if so, if you can limbo your modified adjusted gross income, or MAGI, down under 139 grand, you're in. If you're married and filing jointly, and by married, I don't mean that you've just found the person you want to annoy for the rest of your life, your MAGI must sneak under 206,000 to cha-ching. The maximum total annual contribution for all your IRAs combined is $6,000 if you're under age 50 and $7,000 if you're age 50 or older. Good news, too. If you haven't maxed out your Roth, you still have a month. Now it's time for me to go earn some more reward points. See ya.
Nice job, Doug, on the trivia as, he walks up the stairs to go get more donuts. So he's like, my work here is done.
That's Doug for you.
Why don't we go ahead and throw out the Haven Lifeline then? Tackle some of life's most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they put what you value first.
I've been thinking a lot about fun dip lately.
A fun dip. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a bag of sugar and you eat it off of a stick made of sugar. How great is that?
It's a wonderful idea.
And parents all over is like, yeah, sounds like a good idea to me. That won't make my kid a total wreck later. What could possibly go wrong with Fun Dip? Man, I loved Fun Dip.
Yeah, that's why I've been thinking about it.
And how about those? What were the little things that crackled in your mouth? Remember those? And then you put them in...
It's Pop something.
I can't remember.
Snap, Crackle, Pop. Those are three characters from Rice Krispies.
Yeah, but sometimes they would even hurt.
Pop-Tarts.
Pop. I'm not going to get it. Anyway, I'm sure if you put that on your Haven Lifeline application that you live on Fun Dip, that they'll give you the best insurance rating ever. Actually, their process is incredibly smooth. It's all been modernized. It's all online. Takes just a few seconds. And if you've ever filled out a life insurance app, you know the difference between that and the normal app. You also get a coverage decision in most cases right away. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/Haven Life for more. Today, we'll throw out the lifeline to Mihai. Say hi, Mihai.
Hello, Joe and OG. I have a question that pertains to estate planning, life insurance, open enrollment, amongst other topics. Our current situation is that I'm 42 years old and my wife is 34. We have twin 15-month-olds and a 4-year-old. My Social Security benefits are the following. The total family benefits cannot be more than $5,480. Survivor benefits, child or spouse who is caring for a child is $2,348. And survivor benefits starting at retirement age is $3,131. Disability is $3,047. My wife's total family benefits cannot be more than $3,637. Survivor benefits, $1,499. And survivor benefits if benefits start at retirement age of $1,999. For estate family purposes and our planning, if my wife and I were to pass away and our children are still under 18, would the appointed caretaker in our will receive the survivor benefits from both my wife and I, or would it only be from the highest earning parent? Would the benefit max out at the total family benefit, or does it pay out per child? So if my benefits are total family $5,480, but it's $2,348 per child, which would come first? Our will is broken out between who takes care of the children if something were to happen to us and who manages the finance. Do I have to specify in the will that the Social Security is managed by the same person as the finance? Thank you.
Wow, some great questions there. And this is a part of planning.
Can you repeat the part of this stuff where you said all about the things?
This is a part of planning that a lot of people mess up. So talking about, is he talking about Social Security? Is those his numbers? Is those numbers he gave? Is those pension numbers?
Yeah, Social Security. I mean, Social Security is a benefit that people don't remember that they have. But I also think it's one that is worth forgetting that you have as it relates to your contingency planning, so to speak. I wouldn't look at Social Security and say, oh, well, they're going to pay, you know, $2,500 a month per kid. So cha-ching, they'll be set, because it's not super simple to get the government involved in your life. I'll give you a great example, just a personal one. My mom's been waiting on her Social Security check for, I think she's on month 9. Because she's got a complicated situation, and they're just like, yeah, sorry, it's just really complicated. We'll let you know. And so that doesn't solve the problem. And as inexpensive as life insurance is, we just talked about it with Haven, probably you want to solve your estate plan using regular life insurance. And then, you know, if you get a kicker from Social Security, but in particular, the answer to your question is the family benefits are maxed out. So if you have another kid, then that's going to affect everybody else's income along the way. You know what I mean? This is the same thing if you have multiple spouses, divorced spouses, right? And you've got another situation that I'm familiar with. We've got a husband that earns money from his Social Security, an ex-wife that gets money from his Social Security, a current wife that gets money from his Social Security, and two disabled children who get money from his Social Security. Well, when the last person joined the party, so to speak, when the last person joined the party, that effectively changed everyone else's math in that calculation, because they're already at the maximum. So they got to give something to the other person who's entitled, but they're going to take it from the other beneficiary, so to speak. So that maximum is the maximum.
How does Social Security in payments to children integrate with the estate plan? If he has a different, it's called the conservator, the person that takes care of the money for the kids,
right,
versus the guardian, which is the person actually taking care of the kids. He's got two different people there. Will the money go to the conservator every month and the conservator doles it out according to the estate plan, or is there something he's got to set up?
I don't know. This would be a great question for an estate planning attorney. I feel like the reality is that the Social Security money will be more heavily regulated by Social Security in the court system for the minor children than your regular estate plan. So probably whoever is in charge of the kids will be the one that will be in charge of the Social Security benefits and will be required to report it to the court system when asked about how it was being used. But that's a good question for an estate planning attorney.
Well, it's interesting. How about that? The phone's ringing right now. Let's pick it up.
It's like the bat signal.
Hey, this is Joe. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, this is Devin.
Devin Carroll, Mr. Social Security Intelligence. How are you, man?
Fantastic. How are you guys?
Well, good. And it's funny that you called in right now because OG and I have this question for our friend Mihai, and it has to do with Social Security. If he and his spouse pass away and his Social Security money's going directly to children, he has a separate guardian and conservator. So conservator taking care of the money. He's wondering if he has to set something up with Social Security to have the money go to the conservator who's taking care of the money instead of to the guardian, or is there no way to do that with Social Security?
Yes. Well, actually, there is a way to do that. You couldn't do that in the past before death or a need came up to have a designated payee or a representative payee. But you can do that in advance now on SSA.gov. If you log into your My SSA account, there is a way to set up in advance a representative payee. However, I don't think setting it up in advance, they're going to let you do a whole lot of fancy stuff. They may let you name like a spouse or another family member. I'm not sure how advanced they'll let you get. But at the time of need, there is a hierarchy that the administration will follow to go down the list. If this person is not available, then this person, and then they'll continue to go down that list. And if there's written instructions, and if you let your family members know, then they will name the right designated payee.
Awesome. So have your executor of your estate or contingent trustee then work with Social Security is what you're saying.
Yes. And you might want to log onto the website, go to your My SSA account. Dear Lord, everyone needs one. If you don't have one, set it up. Every day that passes and you haven't set yours up is another day that someone else may set it up for you for not so positive reasons.
Really? There's a bunch of fraud in that area?
I wouldn't say there's a bunch of fraud, but it certainly is. You know, it's enough that the commissioner of the Social Security Administration has made some announcements about, please set this up so someone else doesn't set this up for you.
Wow.
I don't know exactly what the extent of it has been, but yeah, I know those guys are constantly after your information. You need to set it up.
Sure.
It's a frustrating website to use in some cases, but yeah.
A government website that's frustrating, that's a shock.
I know, it is.
Devin, we're going to link everybody to Devin's YouTube page where if you want to know everything about Social Security, by the way, and Devin also has a couple of amazing books on the topic. We'll link to you, man, for helping us out here. I really appreciate it.
Well, perfect. Thank you guys for thinking about me.
Well, there you have it, OG, right in time.
Perfect, because I was way wrong.
And that's why it always pays to surround yourself with good friends. Hey, that's going to do it for today's episode. Big thanks to everybody. I think you can see just what a great community we've got, OG, and some fantastic people, Alan, Claudia, and John, just a few of the people out there doing great things, stacking Benjamins. Thanks to everybody who wrote in. I'm sure, you know, Doug's going to do his job and thank everyone as well, but wanted to do that. If you want to make it really easy to listen to future shows, just tell your smart speaker, listen to Stacking Benjamins, and you may be surprised to find that listening to the next show is easier than you thought wherever you're at. So check that out wherever you have smart speakers. And finally, if you are looking to surround yourself with better people, OG and his team are taking clients. And as you can see, he's well connected with people where if he doesn't have the answer, he'll make sure that he gets the right answer for you. Head to stackybenjamins.com/OG to see how adding better help to your team can help you make better decisions in 2021. All right, that's going to do it. Doug, you've got it from here, man. What should we have learned today?
So what should we have learned today? First, take a lesson from our headline. What's your legacy? Go save a gorilla or a school or something that helps your community. You won't regret it. Second, driving for Uber, it can work, but you still need to do some math and experiment with the best times to drive. That kind of thinking applies to any side hustle. Work the numbers. But the big lesson? I just got free tickets to Hawaii using an airline card. All I need to do is pay off this $10,000 balance I racked up in the last 20 minutes. But hey, you know, free tickets. And I'm also staying at the Hilton for free. And all I gotta do is sit through some 60-minute presentation about the place. But, you know, like, free stay and a tour? So much winning!
To learn more about our guests and for more resources, you can head to our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. Thanks to all of our friends who helped us make today's show. Claudia, Alan, and John, you all rock! This show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Taylor Stevens, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and there's a 73% chance that I played Chuck on Happy Days. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remunerations. That's a big word. There's no way you take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial decisions, consult with a real financial advisor.
Welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show that doesn't exist. I'm here with Alan. Alan, where do you live?
Baraboo, Wisconsin.
And you said that to me a moment ago. I said, we got to hit record if they make this an after show because, and you know, I told you what year it was a second ago. I'm not going to tell everybody what year it is because I'm 39. And so when I was a senior in high school, my parents decided we'd take an epic trip, right? We would go someplace. And what's funny is at the end of this first trip, my parents never did it again. Like this trip ruined us forever. It was just, we started in Kalamazoo where I grew up. We actually went to Baraboo, Wisconsin as our first stop on the trip.
Okay.
Because we went to the circus museum.
Of course.
Yes. Of course. That place is really cool, man.
Yes. Yes.
It was fantastic. How many times have you been there? Or is that the kind of thing you go to once and you're done?
No, several times. And when I was a kid too, I lived north of here, probably about 60 miles, and we did like a school trip as well. So it's very popular for that.
It's interesting, this place, and I'm going to try to describe it and you correct me. I think they have like three people that work there. And they take your ticket when you come in the door. You go through these museums. What was it? Is it? I mean, do you know much about it? Was it the winter headquarters for Barnum and Bailey or something like that?
I believe so. Right. I'm not super sure.
You didn't know I was going to ask you to become the circus museum expert, did you?
Right. I did not study that.
Alan's like, I was thinking about credit card stuff, and he's asking me about the damn circus museum. What the hell's up with that? But anyway, they take your tickets. They have this really cool museum. I mean, it is way more than you expect, especially for something that feels at first when you get off the highway, like it's just a roadside attraction, you know, okay, we'll stop here and see what it is. And there was a ton there, but then they have this circus and it's one little ring and it's dirt. And you know, there's these beat up little bleachers that you sit in, and these three people that took my ticket that sold me like popcorn are now changing outfits and jumping on the backs of horses. They're doing the trapeze. They're juggling stuff. Like, they're amazing.
Wow. It was pretty neat. When I was a kid, when we went there, I know we went one time with my parents, and you crossed over the river. They actually had a highway act that was going on, and we were standing on the bridge watching the higher wire act as they were going across. That's like the most memorable part for me.
That's so funny because seriously, when I went there as a kid, because I ended up taking my kids, and that's why I remember it so well. Because number one, I couldn't believe it was still open.
Right.
We were headed that way. And I'm like, let's see if this thing from my childhood's open. Damn, it's still there. I can't believe they made it. And we stopped. And that's how I remember the circus. But when I was a kid, the only thing I remember is the high wire act over the river. Yeah. And if I remember, a man or woman was like holding on to this thing by their teeth.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't think that they do that anymore.
You know why? Because the American Dental Association got no one kidding.
Probably.
Did you? Actually, that'd be repeat business. The probably right. dentist line up going, let's get everybody doing this.
Yeah, it was super memorable. So
yeah, that's funny. Worked. But in Baraboo, is that something like when people come to town, you tell them to go see it or no?
Yes. And there's a circus parade every year. And we live just a couple blocks off the main drag where it goes around in the city. And it's pretty awesome. You know, they still have up until I think a few years ago, they still had the elephants in the, and at one point after the parade, I was doing something in cleaning the car, and through our back alley, they brought the elephants down through.
Right behind your house.
Yeah, I grabbed my phone and started taking pictures, but it was like after the fact that when they're just loading them back up.
That's so wild. I know with animal rights stuff, I think that's what happened, wasn't it?
Yeah. A lot of that. But they still do the parade and they still have, you know, some of the different animals that they show and stuff. So it's still pretty awesome.
Well, man, if the whole credit card hacking thing doesn't work out, Alan, you can always still become a circus performer. You got it right there, man.
That's right. Yeah. When I started working in tech support, I learned how to juggle on that. Well, there's always the circus.
There it is. Well, I hope you got a lot out of today's episode. But one thing that we talked about a little bit today, but we talk about a lot, is you got to have good partners on your team, Stackers. And you know what? Navy Federal Credit Union could be that partner, because becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. And aren't those two of the big tenets, right? Have a debt strategy, earn more, save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. I think that's the coolest certificate. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project? Maybe you want to consolidate debt. Well, as you're putting your plan together, you want to also have a debt strategy, right? And you could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing cost, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Don't get in over your head with debt. Make sure you have a great strategy and then take out debt as you need it. And Navy Federal's options certainly give you the flexibility to help you make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, equal housing lender, membership required, terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval.